morning. You may be seated. Justice Lanzinger is not participating in oral arguments, but she will be participating in voting on the cases that we argue this morning. The first case is 06-2343, Andrea Helen Sandgrick versus Carol M. Rady, trustee. Ms. Carlin.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, I am Angela Carlin. I and my co-counsel, Sean Maisel, represent Carol Rady as the trustee under the will of Andrea Sandgrick, in which she provided a testamentary trust for the benefit of her father for his remaining lifetime. The proposition of law, which we support, is that when a testamentary trust contains property at the end of the life estate, that remainder passes to the heirs of law of the testator at the time of the testator's death when there is no residuary clause in the testamentary trustee, and not to the heirs at law of the testator as determined under the statute of descent and distribution, 210506, at the death of the life beneficiary.
Counsel, is there, my take on reading the briefs is there really isn't any helpful guidance in terms of Ohio law for either outcome, and apparently the whole case turns on whether you use the statute of descent and distribution as of the death of the beneficiary under the trust, when you now know you have a residual estate, whether that's the point in time that you look to see who are the heirs at law, or whether it is the date of death several years earlier. That seems to be the question, and it doesn't seem like there's anything out there that helps us decide that in Ohio law. Is there anything in, how have other states handled that? Have you looked at that?
Well, Your Honor, you're correct. The issue here is whether you use the statute of descent and distribution 210506 to pass the undistributed residue at the time of the life beneficiary's death, either under the statute at the time of the testator's death or at the time of the life beneficiary's death. And what the 8th District Court of Appeals did not support was that under statutory law, at the time of the testator's death, her heirs at law, in this case her sole heir at law, her father, under the revised code 210506, had a vested interest in any property which was undisposed of by his daughter at the time of her death in her will. Her father, who had the life beneficiary estate, had a vested interest in the residue which was undisposed. That's what the 210506 provides. Either a decedent dies without a will, or a testator doesn't dispose of all of the property in his or her estate at the time of the death, and then the residue, in this case, undisposed of in the testamentary trust, passes to her heirs at law. She had one heir at law, her father. He had a vested interest. This court.
Well,
I think
we all understand.
Yeah.
How it works, the question is, which point in time should you look to the statute? And the Court of Appeals cited Section 430 of the Restatement of Trust to get where they ended up. That may be as good as anything that we have to look to.
Well, Your Honor, this court has not made a determination in this particular specific case where there's a testamentary trust with an undisposed of residuary property. However, this court has provided in cases with life estates where there is no residuary clause passing the residue at the time of the termination of the life estate in the Gilpin versus Williams case and the Matthews versus Kreischer case. We contend, Your Honor, that the 8th District Court of Appeals ignored the statutory law, 210506, that was the solution in this Sangra case. Instead, the Court of Appeals set up an artificial second trust in Andrea Sangrick's will, which was not provided in that will. The Court of Appeals ruled that using this second trust equitable vehicle, that the property remaining at the time of the life beneficiary's death in Andrea's will, her father, that property then would pass to a second trust, this artificial trust, which the court labeled as a resulting trust.
But Ms. Carlin, I agree with everything that you've said, and the court did set that up, but I believe, sort of in follow-up with Justice Pfeiffer's question, they were relying upon illustration 3 to the comment of section 430, which indicated that the example that was given in the restatement, A bequeaths $10,000 to B in trust, the income to C for life, which seems to be the scenario we have here. There is a resulting trust of the principal of the trust fund after C's death to A, next of kin or residuary legatee. And it was that illustration in the restatement, I think, which prompted the thinking of the Court of Appeals and which is troubling to me. Could you comment on that illustration?
Yes, Your Honor. That illustration used by the court, illustration G in section 430, gives A provides $10,000 to B in trust for the lifetime of C.
Yes.
There's no residuary clause. However, section 430 provides that at the time of C's death and there's no distribution over of the residue, then the property goes back to, results back into the testator. That's the purpose of a resulting trust. It always sends the property back to the testator to be disposed of at the time of the testator's death under the statute of descent and distribution. I contend, Your Honor, that the appellate court misused section 430 because if the court had followed example G, the property at the death of C with no residuary clause, here, her father, the property under section 430 was to pass back. It results in, resulting trusts are many times called reverter trusts because the property reverts back to the testator to be disposed of under the statute of descent and distribution at the time of the testator's death. Here, the appellate court did not follow the provisions of section 430 or example G, and instead imposed this second trust arbitrarily, in essence rewrote Andrea's will, and said that the second trust would be instituted at the time of the life beneficiary's death. Since the life beneficiary was deceased, he could not inherit. So then the appellate court sent the property forward, I'll say, to her next of kin, her heirs at that time,
yes,
the 12 cousins, her next of kin.
Yes.
This was not Andrea's intent. Her intent was to give the entire estate during her lifetime for the benefit of her father. That is so clear, even to the extent where the testamentary trustee could make distributions to him during his six-year lifetime after his daughter died of the principal of the trust estate. Giving the property to her cousins was certainly not carrying forth her intent because she never had that intent as expressed in her will.
Well, it didn't appear in the will that she really had an intent to leave everything to her father either. Otherwise, there wouldn't have been any need to create a life estate. She could have just left it to him outright.
Your Honor, you're correct. And the only estimate that I could make is that she intended her father to enjoy the entire estate, intended her cousin, Carol Rady, as testamentary trustee to use it all up during his lifetime. He survived her by 6 years, and there was a remaining fund. And because she didn't have a residuary clause, it had to go back to be disposed of under the statute of descent and distribution to her sole heir at law, her father. Now, we have other cases that this court has determined where we have life estates without residuary clauses, where the court provided that in the Gilpin case, when the daughter died, there was a residue, she had no children to whom the next gift had been provided for, then the property again went back to the testator to be disposed of under the statute of descent and distribution at his death to his heirs, subject to being defeated if his daughter had children. The same thing in the Matthew v. Kreischer case. And then that case, Your Honor, is very similar to the Sangra case. In that case, the testator had just one provision. He gave his wife the entire estate for life. There was no provision over. His wife, Phoebe, survived him by almost close to 40 years. At the date of her death, there was still a residuary fund in that life estate. This court provided that the wife, as his sole heir at law, receive that property under the statute of descent and distribution at the time of her death. She was his sole heir at law. That case is very similar to the Sangra case.
This would be, you're suggesting that we should use the same sort of thinking as if a testator didn't entirely dispose of all of their property. And it's the same sort of analogy. Let's say they transferred most of it, but we have this CD over here or something that they didn't dispose of at all. You're suggesting that this is sort of analogous to that.
Yes, Your Honor, that's what I'm suggesting, because that's the purpose of the statute of descent and distribution, 210506.
Counsel, could I ask a question? You seemed, by earlier comments, to say that the creation of the second trust, a resultant trust by the Court of Appeals, was inappropriate. But what I'm hearing now is that it wasn't inappropriate to create this. It's just whose death triggered the use of descent and distribution? Am I understanding this correct?
Well, your understanding is correct in this respect, Your Honor, that the 8th District Court of Appeals should have simply followed the provisions of the statute of descent and distribution and not imposed a second trust in Andrea's will, and then had this artificial structure that the appellate court took the residue at the time of the initial trust, they labeled it, provided in the will of the testator, put those proceeds into this second trust because there was no residue, and then passed the proceeds in the second trust to Andrea's next of kin, her cousins, completely ignoring that her father had a vested interest under the statute 210506 because the property in the trust was not disposed of at the time of the life beneficiary's death. I contend, on behalf of the appellant, that the equitable vehicle that the 8th District Court of Appeals used was unnecessary, it's bothersome, it will cause confusion going forward as to what happens, simple question, when there is a residue at the end of a life estate and there's no residuary clause. The statute, 210506, already has the solution. The court should have followed statutory law.
Counsel, was there at the trial level, you allude to what the daughter intended, and it doesn't seem we could determine that from what we see here. Was at the trial level, was there any discussion or indication that this one cousin was special to her as well, and above all other cousins?
Well, yes, Your Honor, because the will of the daughter, Andrea, was executed drafted by the same attorney, executed at the same time.
Which would indicate that if she loved this cousin over all of her other cousins, she could have done the same thing the father did, and that is provide that if there's anything left, it goes to your client. But she didn't do that.
Well, Your Honor, she provided that her entire estate, both principal and income, be used for her, the benefit of her father, for his lifetime. There was no residuary clause in her will. I think her intent was use up all of the property for my father.
But he had one.
But he had a will, Your Honor. And in his will, he gave his property first to his daughter and then provided that if she predeceased him, which she did, it would go to his niece, Carol Rady. So it was obvious that these three were very close. Yes, she may have understood at that time that if she predeceased her father, we don't know that.
Your answer to my question is nothing occurred at the trial level that demonstrated any particular...
Your Honor, your question as to the trial level, what happened at the trial level is very good, because at the trial level, when the father died and the trustee was still holding a fund of money, she filed a declaratory judgment action asking the court for instruction. The magistrate at the trial level held one thing: distribute the property according to the statute of descent and distribution.
We know what he held. Yeah. I'm asking whether there was any evidence that your client was bringing tea and cookies over every day and the rest of the cousins were scattered around the world and didn't care about these people.
But I think, Your Honor, if you look at the testator's will,
the answer to that question apparently is no.
Well, she intended the entire estate to be used for her father during his lifetime. That she preferred this one cousin versus the other 12 cousins, that was not apparent in her will.
That's all I'm asking you.
You've used your time, Ms. Carlin.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
You've used your time.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appellee has waived oral argument. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.